In Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be here this morning and appreciated the thoughts that were shared. And I enjoyed being here yesterday too, spending some time with all of you and just seeing the working together of everyone was a blessing. It was a blessing to see that and to realize that we're working for a common goal. And it was good to be here for that. I had a little struggle getting my thoughts together and getting a grasp on this subject, and so I may struggle along a little bit here, but I'd like to look at a subject that is not particularly pleasant, and in fact the Bible calls it grievous, and but it is something that I think every Christian is going to experience at some point, and it's something that will make you more Christ-like if you allow it to. I'd like to turn to Hebrews chapter 12. I'm going to read down through verse 17 here. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not resisted unto blood, striving against sin. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our own flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men, and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled, lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For you know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. So what I'd like to look at is the subject of chastening, and being a kind of person that enjoys words and their meanings, I had to look this up and sort of study it a little bit for myself, the meaning of the word chasten. And if you look up the word chastise, it says to inflict punishment on or to censure severely. And that's not really the meaning that this verse is bringing out. More properly, the word that we would look at is the word chasten, which, according to the dictionary, is an archaic word. It's not really a word in modern English. But chastise is talking about punishment, and I believe that punishment is reserved for the wicked. Punishment is what the wicked receives for what they do, for their wrong, for their evil. And to bring this out just a little bit, there's a verse here in Isaiah I was going to read. It says, this is a prophecy concerning Assyria. It says, wherefore it shall come to pass that when the Lord hath performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. So here God is talking about he was going to chasten Israel for their sin, and he was going to punish the king of Assyria after he had used the king of Assyria as his tool. He was going to be punished because he was a wicked ruler. And you know, punishment is not what we're looking at in this case. Chasten, the correct definition I think that we're looking at in this verse is to correct by punishment or suffering. And another definition is to prune of excess, pretense, or falsity. So it's something that happens to you. It's not a punishment and an end thereof, but it's an action that happens to you, and it's meant to change you. Chastening is what the righteous person receives. Our sins are already paid for. Therefore, it's not a punishment when we receive something from the Lord for something that we do wrong, but it's a chastening. It's maybe a fine line there, but I think that's an important distinction. A synonym, I think, of chastening here is discipline or instruction. And the Greek word that is used in this passage in Hebrews has two definitions. One is to train up a child and or educate, and the other one is discipline by punishment. So I think it's something that it's the motivation behind it that we need to look at. Chastening is an action motivated by a desire to correct. So it's an instruction that you receive maybe by some hard or difficult circumstance in your life, whereby you learn to change your heart, to follow God more closely. You know, I had to think about when we discipline our children. We discipline them we're looking at a result. We want them to learn. We want to change their heart because we love them. You don't leave them how they came. You don't leave them in that sinful nature in full control of their lives. You work to bring that sinful nature into control. You work to bring out a nature that's controlled by Christ. And if you leave them where they're at, that's not love. That's neglect. And I don't think love neglects discipline. In Proverbs 13:24 it says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." So we don't spank our children because we're angry at them. At least we shouldn't be. Your discipline is part of your whole training program to make your children into godly people. And in the same way, God is looking at shaping us into the people that He wants us to be. And one of the methods He uses is chastening. This verse in Deuteronomy stood out to me about chastening. It says, "Thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee." So in a very similar way that we would chasten or discipline our children, God will also treat us. I think we need to look at the motivation for chastening. It's motivated for our own good. It's motivated by God's desire to make us into Christ-like people. God's not looking for a way to push our faces in the dirt when we do wrong. He's not looking for a way to make us, you know, to destroy us. But He's looking for a loving way to wake us up and to help us see our need of Him and to change and to draw closer to Him. He's not out to get pain as a retribution for what we do, but He wants to make us stop, and He wants our hearts to be completely His. That's His goal in the end. If you look at there in verse 11 of this chapter, it speaks of that goal just a little bit. It says, "No chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby." So that should be our goal as well, as the peaceable fruit of righteousness. But notice the last part of that verse there. It says, "unto them which are exercised thereby." And, you know, there's the kind of the, I don't know, the problem, I guess you could say, that comes up by this whole thing of chastening. We don't want to be chastened. It's not fun. It's repellent to us. It hurts. It's the word grievous means suffering, and intense suffering. And this is often the way that God, you know, this is the way that God has chosen to correct us. But it's not fun. And I had to also, along with this, had to ask myself, what are some ways that a Christian is chastened? And I don't really know the answer to this question very well, but one of the ways, a primary way that we are chastened is by our conscience. And, you know, we're tortured by our conscience from the things that we do wrong until we make them right. I had to think of David in the Old Testament. When he sinned with Bathsheba, his conscience tortured him and bothered him. And he ended up writing the psalm there that says, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit in me. He felt that distance that he had placed between him and God because of his sin. That sin had brought this distance between him and God, and he couldn't bear that feeling, that knowledge that he had done something that put that thing between him and God, and that bothered and tortured him. And you know, I don't think just because we feel God is God is far away from us that it means that we're being chastened. But I think David knew in this case that the knowledge that God was away from him, that there was this thing between him and God, that was a chastening, that had a chastening effect in his life. And he did all he could to make that relationship back to where it was. That chastening brought him back brought him to the point where he wanted to make that relationship what it should be. He wanted that relationship with God restored to how it was before. Other things that the ways we could be chastened would be a bad relationship, you know, things that happen that can chasten us there when we choose bad relationships. A person who rejects the church and goes willfully his own way can find chastening in his life in the way that his family turns out. When children refuse to follow their parents' instruction or honor their parents, they can find that they'll be chastened by the Lord. And a small example that that occurred to me this morning was my youngest. He got upset about something, and to show his how he was feeling, he turned and ran. And instead of watching where he was going, he stubbed his toe on something, and so he felt chastened by what happened to him. He felt a certain amount of chastening by that. And you know, I think that's maybe a little bit how it happens to us. We willfully choose our own way, our wrong way, and God allows this thing to happen in our lives, and we know that He is speaking to us in a chastening way. You know, it seems like it's we could say sowing and reaping. There's a certain amount of chastening that can be done that can be felt in that as well, but often it's something above and beyond that, I believe. And the thing to remember is that God doesn't chasten the wicked. He punishes the wicked. He chastens those who are His. So you can take comfort in the fact that God is not, when He chastens you, He's not trying to punish you. He's trying to bring you back to where your relationship with Him is where it should be. You know, if a person goes on rejecting and rejecting the chastening of the Lord, there will come a time when he will receive punishment. An example from the Old Testament of chastening I had to think of was Jonah. Jonah, he was told by the Lord. The Lord said, go and do this thing. Go preach to Nineveh. And Jonah thought, I don't know what he thought, but in any case, he turned around and went the other way. He jumped in the boat and out to sea, and the storm came up. And when the storm came up, Jonah knew what was happening. He knew that it was God speaking in this storm. And he knew at that point that he was being chastened. And from the belly of the whale, Jonah, of course, prayed. And God brought him out of that situation miraculously. And Jonah went on to do what God wanted him to do. The goal of that action wasn't to kill Jonah. It wasn't to punish Jonah, but it was to bring him to the point where he was ready to do what God's will was in his life. So this brings us to the point of how do we know if we're chastened? How do we know when God's chastising us? And I guess this is a question you'll have to answer for yourself. I can't look on your life and say, God's chastening you because of this or that. In fact, I think we have to be careful of making those kind of judgments. In Jonah's case, it's a little easier to see because we have the story after the fact. But it's not so easy for us to look at somebody else and say, he's being chastened or she's being chastened for something. But you know, I can look back in my own life and I can see occasions where I was chastened. My conscience bothered me. it tortured me because there was something I had done that I didn't take care of. I hadn't been careful. And until I took care of that, there was that chastening conscience that was bothering me. And I think that happens to us. And we can be thankful too at the same time that it's happening. You know, Job's friends, to speak of deciding when someone's being chastened, Job's friends tried to look at his life and say he was being chastened by the Lord, and they were wrong. They got it wrong. And so I think we have to be careful about how we look at people and say he's being chastened, because we don't often know those circumstances. So the next question is, how will you respond to the chastening of the Lord, to the discipline of the Lord? Will you allow yourself to be chastened? Will you reject it? The passage here in Hebrews talks about two possible bad reactions, I guess you could say, to the chastening of the Lord. And the first one is, it says that you could possibly despise the chastening of the Lord. And I think our attitude about what's happening to us is the key here. The proud person thinks he's above chastening. He's above needing correction in his life. So he despises it. He rejects it. He says, no, I shouldn't be chastened. I'm good enough. I'm righteous. I don't need this. And so he rejects it. You know, I think we need to be reminded, if we feel that way, that nobody's above chastening. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul talks about all the things that he suffered as an apostle. And amongst that list, he mentioned chastening, him and his fellow workers. So, you know, if Paul received chastening, I'm sure that we can probably need it too. We'll probably need it too. And, you know, the other thing to think about is, if we reject God's chastening, the Bible's pretty plain that God hates pride, and he can't use those people who are proud. He can only use the humble. And we need to remember that we can humble ourselves before God, or he can humble us. It says in 1 Peter 5:6, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. And I think if we humble ourselves and allow God to chasten us, to correct us, the time will come when we will be exalted with him in heaven. And the other thing that the proud person who wants to reject chastening might consider is that, you know, we're the clay and he's the potter. And how can we say, as the clay to the potter, you don't know what you're doing? We need to be clay in the potter's hands that's willing to be molded. I think the other trap or problem that people that are chastened can fall into is just giving up. And you know, when we look at this, we realize that chastening is hard. It's difficult. It's going to maybe discourage you at times. You'll look at your life and you'll realize, you know, God showed me something in my life that where I'm falling short. That's almost a discouragement right there. Now he's chastening me. And you may be tempted to be discouraged and want to give up. But you can't let that happen. Life is tough, no matter what. And in Hebrews, here in this chapter, in verse 12, it says, lift up the hands which hang down and feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet. And we need to keep in the front of our mind, the fact that when God chastens us, it's an act of love. It's not an act of punishment. It's an act of love. He's looking to change us, to make us into people who are more like him, more Christ-like. And if you can keep that in front of your mind, think that, you know, when I work through this, when I come to the other end of this, I will be more Christ-like if I let him work in my life. So when faced with chastening, I think we need to remember, and this verse comes out of Isaiah, it says, now, O Lord, thou art our Father, we are the clay, and thou art potter, and we all are the work of thy hand. So we need to be those people, that clay that's willing, that's moldable, and that is ready to accept the chastening, even if it does seem really hard on us. So maybe you'd rather say, let God stop chastening me. I don't want to be chastened. Would it be good if God quit chastening you? I think we could all agree that that would probably be a sign that something's wrong. God isn't, we aren't his child anymore if he stops chastening us. Chastening is a wake-up call, and it should be a welcome, in some senses, a welcome wake-up call, because we know that God is working in us. I'd like to read a few verses here in 1 Corinthians 11, and starting at verse 28, it says, "Let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily eateth and drinketh damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. For if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened of the Lord, that we should not be condemned with the world." In this passage, I think there's another good reason to accept the chastening of the Lord now. And in verse 31 it says, if we would judge ourselves, I think maybe what it's saying is if we would correctly judge ourselves, God wouldn't have to judge us. But when he does, we are chastened by him. And the last part of that verse, I think, it stands out to me. It says that we should not be condemned with the world. And, you know, if for no other reason, I think we need to realize that we can accept the chastening of the Lord now. And if we choose not to accept the chastening of the Lord now, there will be a time when we will accept God's judgment, but maybe not in a chastening way anymore. So that's another reason to accept God's chastening. You know, when we look at our lives, it talks about in this passage here, we should judge our lives by God's measuring stick, not our own. When we prepare for communion, for example, we look at our lives and we make a judgment to a certain extent on how we're doing, but we don't use our own judgment. We don't say, well, I'm all right, because if we use our own judgment, we're likely to excuse ourselves. But there are times when we're going to mess up, and we're going to make a bad judgment. And, you know, it's hard sometimes to get stopped in your tracks and realize how human you are and your own shortcomings. But when those times come, let's accept God's chastening and accept it now rather than have to accept it later as judgment. You know, in closing, I'd like to remind you that nobody's above chastening. Nobody can say, God doesn't need to chasten me, I'll never need it. And also, maybe we should be afraid if God doesn't chasten us. It says he does it with all his children. And did any of your children, your earthly children, get by without discipline? You know, I think of this, none of mine have made it to that point. So I think I'm a lot like they are. God needs to chasten me, just like I need to chasten my own children. He's going to chasten me. I know it's going to happen. And so when God chastens us, remember your reaction, and that's the key to whether it is effective or not. We'll have to maybe swallow our pride and just take courage in the realization that God cares enough about you to do it. He's not leaving you where you're at. He's not leaving you in that place where your sinful nature is taking over part of your life and controlling you. He's changing you. He's making you into something better. And also, count it all joy that God chastens you, because he is making your faith deeper if you accept it. Let chastening drive you closer to the Lord after all. I'd like to read a little poem here by a fellow named William Bathurst. It says, "Oh, for a faith that will not shrink, though pressed by every foe, that will not tremble on the brink of any earthly woe, that will not murmur nor complain beneath the chastening rod, but in the hour of grief or pain will lean upon its God. A faith that shines more bright and clear when tempests rage without, that when in danger knows no fear, in darkness feels no doubt." Okay, that's all I have for this morning. Does anyone have a thought or a testimony?